Episode 167 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded January 18th, 2018, into the Amazon.
Should we be making jungle noises?
That's the only noise I know.
That's good. What sound do piranhas make? Because they're in the Amazon too, right?
Okay,
yeah, they do that. Yeah. I think so.
If you hear that, get out of the water.
I think they also swim up your urethra if you pee in the water in the Amazon. What I learned from the rundown.
I feel like this is a catch-all animal. I don't think so. Piranha is also a bird and also a parasite. No. You're our resident science expert, Ashley.
I know. You're supposed to know these things.
Yeah, you're welcome.
These are some problems. Welcome.
Look, we're not the nature dudes.
We are not the nature dudes. This
Thank
is true.
God.
Until these animals make their way into a television show,
if we were the nature dudes, this whole studio would smell like patchouli.
If we were the nature dudes, we would have died by exposure already. We're not exactly built for the sun or the cold or
That's
the
true.
Wind.
If we were the nature dudes, this whole our bowl would be filled with granola and we'd just be crunching at the whole podcast.
Oh, man. We would have to like record while we're hiking all the time.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of great.
Yeah.
Oh, we'd get to wear a GoPro.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, just like dudes like Tristan have.
Like all men named Tristan?
Yeah.
All men named Tristan have
They're
GoPros.
They're born. They come out of the womb with a GoPro attached to their head.
Yeah, and you don't want to see that footage.
No.
Speak for yourself. All right, guys, we are the TV Dudes, and I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
I'm Ashley.
Ashley, be professional and not take a sip of beer when I'm surprising you with the intro.
I didn't know it was time. I am Ashley.
Fair. Folks, we are talking about a bunch of shows that have just released on Amazon. We're going to be talking about Jean-Claude Van Johnson, which got picked up for its first season, aired its first season, and then got canceled.
I was going to leave it in suspense that one of them had already been canceled.
The Marvelous Miss Maisel.
Maisel.
Oh, yeah. I typed it wrong. And Electric Dreams, the new Philip K. Dick Black Mirror ripoff.
You know, I have to be honest, half of these sound like the softcore poor version of the actual shows.
They all do.
Yeah.
Every single one of them. So Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and Jean-Claude Van Johnson all sound like the lineup at a softcore porn festival.
Yes, they do.
And we have a Netflix show, which is my next guest in the bedroom. Starring Barack Obama. Nothing sexual about that.
Nothing sexual about that.
My next guest needs no introduction. The new David Letterman show that's airing episodically, oddly enough, on Netflix.
Once a month.
And we got our first episode, which was Barack Obama, which for any of you who don't like Trump, it was pretty depressing.
Yeah.
and uplifting.
It was. Yeah,
at the same time.
Yeah. I really liked it.
I laughed. I cried.
It was a mix of emotions. But we want to say, guys, before we get into the rest of the show, a couple ways you guys can help us out. If you want to go take a minute and go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating and write a little review. That's a great way to help out this show that you love. Another way to help us out is to go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. And there you can make a per episode pledge. Give us a buck or two an episode if you like what you're hearing. In exchange, we do bonus exclusive content. Last week, Kyle had the brilliant idea that we should discuss the Maze Runner franchise.
Despite the fact that none of us had seen even a minute of it.
Despite the fact. And so we just spent a good 30 minutes discussing what we thought that entire franchise might be about.
I'm not going to lie. That was one of my favorite Patreons ever.
So if you guys sign up now, you can go ahead and check out our backlog of episodes, including that gem. Patreon.com/TV Dudes. We also want to say that we are proud members of the Permanent Record Network.
Permanent Record.
And we wanted to promote FemTV. This is our buddy and TV critic Melissa Garamonte, who's hosting a series of interviews interviewing other women that are working in the television industry. FemTVpodcast.com. You can go check it out. Go like her on iTunes as well. Show her some love, guys. It's a great podcast. All right, you guys ready to get in some listener questions?
Yes.
So if you guys like us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/TV Dudes, once a week, Randy puts up a question post, and you can ask us whatever you want. You can comment on stuff that's going on in the world. Ask us crazy stuff. Hopefully it's related to TV, but sometimes it's not.
Sometimes it's not.
All right, first question comes to us from Jeremy Price, who says, love the podcast. Thank you for endless schadenfreude about our political climate. What other Philip K. Dick novels do you think would translate well into an Amazon show?
Ashley, you read books?
I do, but I haven't read these ones.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the Philip K. Dick stuff I know comes from stuff that's already been adapted. Like, I know Blade Runner and Minority Report and all those.
Oh, those would be good TV
shows. Man in the High Castle. That'd be a good TV show. I mean, it could be a good TV show. It's not, but it could be.
Oh, I didn't know Total Recall was his.
Total Recall, yeah. That one. We can buy it for your wholesale, yeah. I don't know Philip K. Dick well enough. Like, so much of his stuff's been adapted, I can't say anything else that should be adapted.
Let's go to the next question that shows our expanding ignorance.
Yikes, you guys. We need to go to a library.
Kyle Volte asks, so the marvelous Miss Maisel, not Miss Mabel, by the way.
Yep.
She's interacted with Lenny Bruce in the show. So are there any other contemporary comedians you would like to see portrayed in the second season? And if so, any casting choices?
Ashley, you know history. Who should it be?
Always starting with me on this one. God damn, y'all.
It's just deflection. I don't have any ideas.
Oh.
I can think it's like Jackie Gleason and some of those guys, but I have no idea what the time. It's 1958, man. I have no idea.
Okay. 58. Y'all know I'm not on Facebook. You got to give me a heads up.
Bob Newhart?
Well, Bob Newhart's in it.
I know. I was like, maybe we can actually see him.
Is he?
Wait. Does he actually pop up like in person?
No, I am. It's
just that his
axe ripped off. And then, of course, they see him performing it.
Oh, that's right.
On late night at the time. But... Yeah.
All right. So according to IMDb, some of the 50s comedians would include.
Yeah, let's do this.
Jerry Lewis, Dean Martin, Bob Hope, Bing Crosby, Groucho Marx. Oh, Groucho Marx.
Yeah,
awesome.
That would be a good one.
Milton,
the trick, I think, is to find one that isn't just going to be a dick to her.
Yeah, good luck with
that. Because
we've
already covered Lenny Bruce and now Groucho Marx. That might be all we have.
Milton Berle, Sid Caesar. See, all these guys are like the comedians that she's bumping up against, because Lenny Bruce was sort of the outlaw comedian at the time. And the thing is, I think that one of the reasons you have trouble finding somebody else is that he was the guy doing that. Nobody else was doing the same kind of comedy that he was doing.
Yeah.
So I think having her run in with like Bob Hope is just going to be a weird thing.
She can run into Jerry Lewis. How's that?
Yes, Jerry Lewis.
Played by who could play Jerry Lewis? How about David Schwimmer?
David Schwimmer as Jerry Lewis. I'm in.
Sure. Yes. There you go.
There we go.
Let's move on then. Dennis McElwain says, what prevents you from having your regular TV watching week? Anytime somebody visits, I don't have the time. Basically, I become a grumpy douche. What do you guys think? Is there something that's like constantly interfering?
Kids, man.
Yeah.
What is with kids and making you like, they're like, hey, dad, feed us or read to us. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I've got to get through this next episode of Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams so I can see Bryan Cranston's butt.
You still read to your kids?
No, I don't read to my kids.
I was going to be surprised.
No.
Certainly not Philip K. Dick but novels. No,
I read Philip K. Dick novels to my kids. They cry. They cry themselves to sleep.
Yeah, a lot of things are starting to make a lot of sense.
A lot of the dark future that is to come.
I just find like I have all these other projects I'm also trying to juggle. So prioritizing what shows I watch. In fact, I've been watching a bunch of Riverdale with my wife because she was wanting to watch it. I'm like, okay. So I've been watching that rather than doing my TV Dudes homework adequately.
Damn it, Grant.
And let me tell you, that show's not good.
I love that show. It's bonkers.
Oh, it's so ridiculous and trashy. And the dialogue just, I can't roll my eyes that many times in a show.
I think for me, part of the problem is I've become spoiled with not having to schedule television.
Yeah.
So in my mind, it is the thing I can always watch all of the day before, or, you know, I can always just save it for the when I do have time versus other things when I can't. So for me, it's school. I try to get a little bit of exercise. I've got animals and plants that require care.
Mm-hmm.
And so not children, but other things are kind of scheduled.
Yeah.
And at this point, my expectation is like, I shouldn't have to be where you want me. And so...
I've seen basically I do my homework. I for whatever we're gonna watch for that week, I try to schedule whenever I have time, like two or three nights a week, and then I always try and catch The Good Place and Star Trek Discovery pretty much live.
Hmm.
Everything else is on a, well, if we're gonna talk about it now, I'll catch up on it.
I do watch Star Trek Discovery Live. That's true.
Yeah, yeah. We talk about that on our podcast.
We do.
What's that podcast?
Star Trek Discovery Pod. StarTrekPod.com.
Go and give us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, guys.
No pressure. No pressure.
Jonathan Haptemichael says, "Hi, dudes. I'm watching Grown-ish, the Black-ish spinoff following eldest daughter Zoe in college on Freeform, which was formerly ABC Family. And it has been quite an experience so far. I have been out of college for nearly 9 years. I don't count my 2 years of grad school. But some aspects of current college life the show focuses on just make me feel old. What recent shows remind you of your early parts of your life, for better or worse?"
I have one, The Runaways, because I think my parents were trying to murder people.
Oh.
It turns out they weren't. I was just kind of being a dick, like most teenagers. But I did wear a lot of eyeliner for about a week, trying to be cool, but I have really bad allergies. And so it ended up just looking like I was more depressed than ever, which was not a good look for me at the age of 14.
Did you have a staff of one or a dinosaur?
No. I think... I worry I would have been Gert.
Gert's awesome.
Gert is awesome. So I would have been Gert without the dinosaur.
Oh.
Yeah.
A little less awesome.
Yeah, a lot less awesome. Cool jean jacket, though.
Yeah, fair.
What about you, Randy? Is there a show that makes you just wistfully look back upon younger Randy?
Not really, no. I can't think of any shows that make me wistfully look back on younger Randy. I feel like, no, there's nothing that makes me look back.
Yeah, I was like, okay, back in the day, there was like Freaks and Geeks and Undeclared. These were kind of shows that I remember like thinking, oh, yeah, this reminds me of that certain point in time. Mm-hmm.
Were you the bird man? The guy who walked around with a bird on his shoulder?
That was
bird
me.
Man. I knew it.
But yeah, I'm like, what's going on right now that I'm watching that kind of reminds me of any of that? No, nothing in particular. I mean, sometimes I'm reminded of my childhood in an odd lens when I watch Adventure Time, just because it seems so playful and free from reality, I guess, such an escape. So I don't know if that really counts. All right, last question comes to us from Benjamin Hamill, who says, "I recently finished season 4 of Parks and Rec, first time through.
Nice.
And in honor of April and Andy, who are your favorite couples on TV?"
I'm going to go Paul and Jamie Buckman from Mad About You.
Archer
I actually
and Lana.
Really liked them.
Stop, dude.
I liked them.
I feel like you were just recently reminded about Mad About You, and now you feel like you have to name drop it every episode.
Name drop? What, am I getting paid for it?
Yes.
I love Mad About You. I actually think they were one of the better couples on TV, and I don't think either one of them was particularly good separately. What did you say, Ashley?
Lana and Archer.
That's not a couple.
They're a couple. They have a child together.
I don't think. But has
what about their relationship doesn't make them a couple?
That they hate each other.
That sounds like a couple to me.
The Huxtables.
Oh, great.
Yikes.
Oh, whoops. Is that not sorry. Can't look back on that one at all. I always think of Mr. and Mrs. Coach on Friday Night Lights. That's one of my favorite depictions of the ups and downs of couplehood.
Yeah. Ben and Leslie from Parks and Rec are another great couple. I really like them.
Also, the parents and Malcolm in the Middle, I remember being kind of great. Legitimately, I mean, Archer and Lana aside.
There's that one episode of Malcolm in the Middle where she's just completely at her rope's end, and Hal, is completely a boob, and he does something for her at, the baseball park. He's like, look, I know I'm going to be a complete idiot, and I'm not going to be able to do certain things for you, but you have my undying loyalty, so if you do tell me to do stuff, I'll do it, but I just can't do stuff on my own.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, what a lovely relationship there.
It's beautiful.
Grant, who's your favorite lost couple?
I mean, I guess it would have to be Desmond and Penny.
Okay, yeah, yeah. The romantic leads, yes.
Yeah. Although I really have a soft spot for Sun and Jin, too. I thought that one was realized pretty well by the end.
Yeah.
I didn't like, what's his name, Sawyer and Juliet, because I felt it was suddenly dropped in later in the season when that wasn't the relationship I was looking out for.
Oh, I really liked that one.
I don't know. It just kind of caught me by surprise. It was that one and the and Saeed and Shannon.
I was like, I liked all those.
You guys are
nobody beat Nikki and Paulo.
No one did.
That was an eternal love.
Frogert and Arts. That was probably
Frogert and Arts. The little known slash fic.
I have many stories out there if you guys want to read them.
So we alluded to this earlier. Amazon just announced some cancellations. One of the shows we're talking about this week is Jean-Claude Van Johnson has been canceled. And also I Love Dick, the show with Kevin Bacon. And that was not an announcement. I was just saying it was a show that was canceled.
Sure.
You guys can understand my confusion.
That was Kevin Bacon and Catherine Hahn and Griffin Dunne. And I hated that show. And it got canceled. And then the One Mississippi by Tig Notaro.
The Tick, though, did get picked up for a second season.
Tick got picked up for a second season, yes.
So that's kind of exciting.
Is it?
I liked the first season. I thought it was kind of fun. So I want to see more.
Huh. Jean-Claude Van Johnson canceled after the first season. Yeah. Hey, Randy, can you give me the title of that show in your permanent record voice?
Jean-Claude Van Johnson.
I wonder if he tried saying the name of his show like that. And if it could have bought him another season.
I think all shows should be said like that, and it would say that it would definitely help them.
Try I Love Dick or whatever.
No. You know what?
I almost had it.
So close. All right, what other news we got?
I'm looking at this orange motherfucker here, and I see Donald Trump White House book Fire and Fury becoming a TV show.
I don't know why. I feel like
it is a TV show.
It is already. I listened to the book, audiobook, and it is what we all theorized is going on in there is apparently actually going on. It's just a clusterfuck.
So here's my question. And Mike Wolff, the guy who wrote the book, is on board as executive producer. There's a Channel 4 and BBC executive who's on board as producer. What is the tone of this show? Is it going to be a black comedy? Is it a drama? What do you do? I can totally see a show, but what do you do?
Who do you root for? Like, who do you watch in this show? And, like, is your protagonist who you want to, like, see make it through this or something?
America. You're rooting for America. You want to see America make it through this.
But can you think of a show where everyone's the villain and you just want to watch a bunch of bad people just being shitty?
It's like Always Sunny. If they do like Always Sunny, but it's in the White House, sure.
There's something lovable about those people because they're also idiots.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I think, I mean, honestly, and I might get some flack for this, but I didn't like Girls because I had nobody to like.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not going to get flack from this.
Not here.
Yeah, I was not a fan of that show because I was just kind of like, oh, great, I get to watch insufferable people be insufferable. Mm-hmm. But not in the comedic way that Always Sunny in Philadelphia, in like the ridiculous way.
You're right.
Just more in like the, oh, these people came into my restaurant and now I have to wait on them for a shitty tip.
Girls is the great comparison for the Trump White House. Just a bunch of entitled white people just bitching about everything and ruining everyone's lives.
Yeah, so I guess I would have a hard time probably with the show as well.
All right, what else we got?
Simon Pegg and Nick Frost are planning a horror comedy TV show called Truth Seekers.
Yay, good news, guys. I brought my Simon Pegg and Nick Frost banners. I can finally wave them.
Yay!
These guys made, along with Edgar Wright, Spaced, which is one of the best TV shows ever.
Never watched it.
Oh, man, it's super good. Ashley, have you seen Spaced?
I have seen episodes from it, not the whole thing, and it's super good.
I love Spaced.
Yeah, really good.
So we don't know whether they're going to be on camera in this one or if they're just going to be like producing, but basically it's going to be a horror comedy about paranormal investigators that encounter different supernatural creatures. So
sweet.
Yeah, it's supernatural but goofy comedy.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, those guys?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe Edgar Wright can come in for like directing like the pilot episode or something.
And finally, from the sublime to the ridiculous, a Bad Boys TV show has been ordered by NBC.
Wait, which, by the way, where are Simon Pegg and Nick Frost for that? Because yeah. I really oh, feel man. Like they get it.
Yeah, for sure.
I read a tweet from our buddy Cargill, which was, maybe I should just go ahead and look it up. But basically he was saying that Dom Toretto is racing down the road and all these police are chasing after him. He pulls to the side of the road, hops out of the car, and then out of the smoke comes Will Smith, who's like, now that's how you drive. That is how you drive. From now on, you drive like that. Coming soon. What do you call it? Fast Boys? I don't know what it was.
Fast Boys Tokyo Drift?
The Fast and the Bad or something like that.
So this is going to be Gabrielle Union played Martin Lawrence's sister and the love interest of Will Smith in the movies.
Yeah.
So in the TV show, she's going to become an LAPD detective. She'll partner with a cop named Nancy McKenna. And they will be polar opposites who bicker at first before coming together to do the job.
Does one of them play by the rules and the other one is a loose cannon?
Yeah.
Do you suppose that one of the show might be called Bad Girls?
It might be, but that's a different kind of show. That's actually a show you find on Amazon.
Oh.
You know what? I would watch one episode. I'm not going to lie.
You can see Bryan Cranston's butt in that, too.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Deal. All right, guys. So we're going to go in the order of the Amazon shows first, Jean-Claude Van Johnson, followed by Electric Dreams, and then The Marvelous Miss Maisel. And then we're going to close out with My Next Guest Needs No Introduction, the new David Letterman show talking about Barack Obama. First up, though, Jean-Claude Van Johnson. I remember seeing the pilot, Randy, and with Amazon structure, they show pilots early.
And then everybody votes, and then they put together whatever shows they're going to put together anyway.
It seems like an awkward system, actually.
I don't think the votes have any. I think their votes are about as useful as the votes we have in our U.S. elections.
So you're saying people shouldn't vote?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. It's 100%. I want that message taken away. Please don't vote.
I remember thinking, like, of the shows we saw, there was this one, I Love Dick, and...
I'm sorry, what was that last one?
I Love Dick.
I got a new ringtone just like that.
For Randy, though.
For Randy, obviously.
It's weird, but...
No one else is here. They'll never know that it wasn't Randy.
I say it. Randy gets the kudos. Anyway, we kind of liked it, or I at least kind of liked the pilot.
Yeah, I thought
it
was the pilot.
Witty. It was a fun little take on this like fantasy world where he's actually a spy. Mm-hmm. But you watched the rest of the season.
I did.
And it obviously got canceled.
Yes.
So what do you think?
That was a righteous cancellation.
Okay.
Because I watched this. The pilot, I remember thinking, like, I have no love for Jean-Claude Van Damme. I've never seen most of his movies. And the pilot, I thought, oh, this is kind of a funny – they did some funny stuff with it. The notion that basically the talent agency was running a freelance spy organization, that his makeup girl was like his handler and his ex-girlfriend. Like, there were some neat ideas in there. And it turns out those were all the ideas they had.
Oh.
Because every episode is like that. It's like – The producer of the movie turns out to be the evil bonded bad guy who's building a weather dominator, and it's like everything is exactly what you would think from that premise.
Okay.
So yeah, I got tired of it real fast.
So this made it a full six episodes. What was the season arc?
It was him dealing with his ex and then getting back together, and him working on the movie and trying to figure out who the bad guy was. And there were some fights.
Okay.
And there was a point. There was a point at which a version of him came back from the future, like a time cop riff, and it was like actually a time cop riff.
Oh.
It was. There was some weird shit going on in this show.
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening.
You
what?
Didn't, yeah. No, you didn't miss a lot.
Okay. Cool.
Appropriate reaction.
Okay.
Yeah. But it was weird.
Well, speaking of weird, let's go ahead and move on from this one, because I feel like we don't need to spend too much time on that show.
It's already canceled.
It's canceled. Yeah. So forget it. Don't worry about even going and checking it out, guys.
Nope. Nope. Don't worry about the 6 hours I spent on it.
Electric Dreams. Now, this is Philip K. Dick, and this is a little, what we call it, anthology, yeah. Episodic mm-hmm. anthology series. And this is kind of in the vein of Black Mirror, as this like
Twilight Zone, Twilight, Outer Limits, yeah. all that stuff.
I only saw the first episode, but I know you guys watched a little bit more.
Yeah. How much did you watch, Ashley?
I watched everything except I think there's 10 episodes. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I watched 9 of the 10.
Oh, wow.
Including the one where you get to see Brennan Cranston's ass.
Oh, does that happen in the show? I just was talking about that.
Yeah. And I realized that. You were just bringing it up apropos of nothing, but indeed, if you watch enough episodes, you will get to see it.
Interesting.
Yeah, I got to be honest. Getting it done.
Yeah?
Okay. Getting it? Nice booty there, huh?
Yeah, I'm... So, it's not bad. I mean, it wasn't a booty I particularly asked for or was expecting for that matter, but yep. when it happened, I was like... Go on.
You guys were saying that there's like a weird like softcore Skinamax vibe
yeah.
going on.
Yeah. So in almost every episode, there is a sex scene mm-hmm. that is either more nudity than you would have expected to see, or if there's not straight up nudity, it's like the shadows behind a sheet or something like that
yeah.
to the point that it's depending on who's in the room, it would be uncomfortable. And so I'm kind of being like, oh, shit.
And there's always an accompanying saxophone.
It's true.
Sweet.
It's true.
I feel like this whole show was kind of dated.
It was. So I was really nervous going in because the intro.
Yeah.
My God, it is terrible.
It's
it looks
really
like if you've ever gone home with someone you shouldn't have, and then you wake up, and then you see a poster on the wall, and you're like, fuck. I've made a terrible mistake, the kind I haven't made since college. The entire intro looks like those posters. And you were just like, God, I bet this guy loves Pink Floyd. Loves them.
It's so corny. Like,
God, it's yeah. really corny.
It reminded me of that HBO show Perversions of Science. More so in
Classic.
Like the yeah. intro itself. But
Babies doing Ring Around the Rosie. The yeah. pregnant man.
The pregnant
oh,
man,
come
yeah.
on.
Oh, what about when the guy turns and it turns out he's a robot because you
what?
See the back of his head. Yeah. It's weird. I know that Philip K. Dick was a 60s writer, and I know that they are basically doing modern versions of 60s sci-fi, which could easily – I understand where the datedness comes from.
Yeah.
But they try to update it. So, like, they're doing, like, social media riffs. They're doing a riff on Amazon drones in one episode. But it's
hashtag
like,
resist.
But it's like they're fitting it into these 60s concepts, and I feel like they're better off just going period piece.
I think I agree with you. I liked, actually, the first episode the best. Mm-hmm. And so – when I saw the intro, I was like, fuck. But then the first – okay, so it's –
that's the Anna Paquin, Terrence Howard body reality shipping.
Yeah, so this woman who is a cop, something had happened where a bunch of guys – people on her squad get killed.
Yeah.
She survives. She feels guilt about it. Her wife works at some like tech company that has the power to do kind of 13th floor stuff where you can put on an ultra-realistic VR experience. And then the question starts becoming, wait, which version of her life is the real one? And I actually kind of liked it.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty good.
It wasn't bad. I felt like it was over long. Like, I felt like all of it could have been in a tighter 30-minute episode, which is how mm-hmm. I felt about every episode I watched. Like,
agreed.
Like, usually I was watching it and I'm like, okay, got it, move on. And I feel like this is sci-fi for people who don't watch sci-fi.
Yeah.
I thought it was curious, like, the amount of detail they start kind of putting in these subplots with, like, the drug runners they're kind of chasing on both sides of the story.
Yeah.
Those turned out to be pretty extraneous. And yeah. I thought there was something else going for them in that episode. And then yeah. I was like, oh, that plot point just did not matter at all.
Yeah, it was literally all a dream.
I feel like they spent a lot of time on each one sort of establishing the world, establishing the characters, and it's like too much time. And by the time they're halfway in, I'm like, okay, got it. Let's move on. Let's get to the story. And then the story just doesn't have any oomph to it, like in any
yeah.
of them.
Yeah, I think the best example of what you're describing is the episode with Steve Buscemi. I don't know if you got
to
see
that one.
Oh,
I didn't
get to that one, no. So it's – what looks like a very rich world where we've been messing with the genetics of things. And mm-hmm. so there's normals and then some things are certain percent normals and everything has a programmed date when it expires, and some people are Jacks and Jills, which means they're actually fully genetically engineered things that have been given a soul. So they build up this whole world that also has like a strange coloring to it, and it does look like you know how like 2001 Space Odyssey looks like the future, but actually it looks like the 60s?
Sure.
Yeah.
So it looks like that, but with like Technicolor. So you're like, oh, okay, cool. So like, where's this going? And then it sort of just fizzles out.
Yeah.
And I'm not even entirely sure I know what happened.
Yeah.
So they either needed to like pick up the pace and be like that series of Ray Bradbury short stories where it's like we kind of get to the point, or do like those episodes of The Twilight Zone where I woke up and I was weird. I was the same, but everyone else was weird.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it needs to be one or the other a little bit.
It's pretty curious to me how they're obviously borrowing off of The Outer Limits, Twilight Zone, Black Mirror in particular, kind of ride this wave, and they're pulling in some pretty big talent.
That's what I was going to say. The there's a lot. Like Steve Buscemi is in this. Greg Kinnear.
Bryan Cranston.
Anna Paquin. Bryan Cranston. Like, there's a ton of good people in this, and I feel like most of them are wasted.
And it's like interesting like material that they're able to pull from because, you know, Philip K. Dick is known for a lot of this brilliant kind of sci-fi.
I've liked a few of his franchises, for sure.
Right? But the fact that it's just kind of dropping the ball is surprising to me. I was reading some articles that were like, this is the new Black Mirror. Bye-bye, Black Mirror. Not you don't know what you're doing.
Not even
no,
close.
No, Black Mirror is so tight. And so kind of – and it's tricky because I want to say well-written for television.
Yeah.
Because obviously of the little of stuff of his I have read it. I mean, I obviously really like it. But as far as making the teleplay for it, I don't know. I mean, and I would still recommend if you've got nothing, you know, you just kind of want to watch something.
Yeah.
I mean, I still – I'm going to watch the last episode.
The thing – it's Ronald D. Moore who did Battlestar Galactica, and I expect a certain edginess from him, and I didn't get it here. Yeah, I don't know. It wasn't. It's not terrible. Like Ashley said, it's not bad. Fine. But I was hoping for something like Black Mirror Lite, and it's definitely not what I got.
I wonder if I had gone in with a clean slate and not expecting more, if I actually would have liked it better.
I feel like this is kind of a common thread with Amazon in general. They rarely hit these heights of like, no matter what, they've got good casts, they've got good premises, they've got good producers on board. They never seem to hit these heights. They always seem to be. They feel a little too like regular TV instead of prestige TV.
Amazon is just kind of dropping the ball for the most part.
Yeah.
And then we get the marvelous Miss Maisel.
Which this was on tons of people's best of lists for last year, and I feel like we kind of missed the ball.
Yeah.
Like it was so good.
It was great, and I'm glad I finally watched it.
I watched this pilot episode, and I've only watched like a little bit of the second episode as well. But that pilot episode is so fantastic, and how she just carries the story.
Yeah.
I was like, why do I know her? But she was from House of Cards in a couple seasons ago, and like a pretty notable role. And I was like, oh, that's who that is.
Well, and it's Amy Sherman-Palladino and her husband doing a lot of the writing, and she has that. She did Gilmore Girls and Bunheads, and has that sort of distinctive Aaron Sorkin-esque dialogue style, but they throw in curse words and that kind of thing, which is a different thing. Also, I watched this pilot, and everyone had really oversold it to me. So I'm watching it, and I'm like, this is okay. I don't get why everyone's so in love with it. And then she gets up on stage.
Well, I feel like once the twist happened, like she established even before that like how – like meticulous and fastidious she is about everything in her life, and she's got control. I'm like, why is she doing all this? Like the scene in particular where she gets out of bed after he falls asleep to like put on her mask and then hop back in bed and then wake up early just so that she's putting on this facade for him to keep him happy. I'm like, this is interesting. Is she afraid he's gonna leave for some reason? And then he does. I was like, oh, okay, here's where the twist comes.
Well, I think this is almost like the antidote to Mad Men, where Mad Men is this view of this sort of sexist 50s, 60s through the male point of view. Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is what that looks like from the female point of view, I think.
Yeah.
It's like you're seeing the other side of that, and you're seeing all the shit that women put up with, and seeing someone who really was way ahead of her time in terms of, you know, doing comedy that got her arrested. And being sort of out there and being, you know, a person who could easily have been an independent woman, except that the time was not set up for it. And so she didn't think she should be.
Yeah, I completely agree. And her routine that she goes through, we learn in later episodes, is actually something her mother does too.
Yeah.
And so this is a long kind of standing thing. I thought they did a lot of really edgy things. And in particular, I mean, even edgy for now, she has a segment where she starts talking about what if she doesn't want to be a mother.
Yeah.
And obviously that would have landed you in jail, yeah, as it did, yeah, back in the show back in the 50s. But that's edgy to say now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I point that out to people, mm-hmm, and people jump my shit.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really cool, and she's so funny when she does it. And of course, in the show, she has children,
yeah,
that she's constantly, yeah, like handing, mm-hmm, off, where she's like, fuck, I just had to fill this role, and now, yeah, I don't even know if I want to. And you're like, okay, that does suck that you're in that position, and now, damn, those kids exist. Edgy.
Also, the whole runner of her life in stand-up comedy and how she kind of keeps deciding she doesn't want to do it. She keeps trying to go back to her regular life.
Yeah.
And the manager who like sees that she's – sees what she could be and is frustrated by her trying to go back to this housewife life that doesn't suit her.
Well, and it's so good. It just – the entire – all of those themes just come out in the best way. And in particular, her manager.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, I'm Susie. Mm-hmm. And then at one point, Mrs. Maisel refers to her as – she's like, oh, well, I mean, is your name Susan? And she's like, no, my name is Susie. My mom named me Susie. She's like, you don't seem like Susie. She's like, do I seem like a Susan? And it's like – no, actually not that either. It's so good.
Yeah, yeah. Alex Borstein from...
Yeah, that's right. She's great here.
I kept thinking it was Janine Garofalo at first. I was like, is that Janine Garofalo?
When she first walks, yeah, into the bar, that's who I thought it was too.
Yeah, and I was like, oh no, it's what's her name from Mad TV and Family Guy.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
I really am all about this episode, and I'm glad to hear that the whole season's pretty solid.
Oh, yeah,
solid.
I think it gets, yeah, better as it goes along.
For sure. And so it just has so much going for it. So there's so much interesting about the Jewish experience in New York at the time. Mm-hmm. There's so much about, you know, women's issues, things of that sort. But then also I love the kind of commentary on comedy and, yeah, what it means to be, mm-hmm, a comic. So at one point, her manager starts taking her to all of these different clubs. And they go to this one where – so they go to a mainstream one and the crowd's cracking up. And she's like, what do you think? And Mrs. Maisel's response is like, well, I mean – Midge's response is like, well, I mean – obviously, they like it and they're solid jokes, but I mean, you know, whatever. She's like, exactly. So they go to this other club, and this guy is a ventriloquist, and he has an act where his dummy has killed himself, but he has no choice. The show must go on. So he does the show, but with the lifeless body of his dummy, and everyone is staring at this person like he's a serial killer.
Yep.
And they are losing their shit.
Dying laughing, yes.
Because there is comedy for comics.
Yeah.
Like, that's a real thing.
Yeah.
And then at another time, when the spells where Midge, Mrs. Maisel, quits comedy, she starts doing the I'm doing air quotes a party circuit,
yeah,
where she gets invited to parties where friends, where she's like telling jokes and everybody's liking it, and you know, so on and so forth. And I think we all have those friends who, because they can make us, mm-hmm, laugh, think they can be comedians.
Right.
Or,
yeah.
Yeah. It's so the kind of subtle things that get put in there about what it is to actually be a comic as a profession.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Love that. Like, well, there's just so many layers to it.
And that party thing where they bring in Nate Cordry playing an, like a male comedian, and they try to partner him up like a –
yikes.
You know, it's funny, but her manager is just horrified. She's like, that's not what you're going to become the pretty face and not the comic, and you're better than that.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of layers about what it is to be a comedian, what it is to be a comedian, and especially in this age when women are expected to have kids and be home and that's it and not work.
It's interesting that they have this operate within the real world in so much as she interacts with Lenny Bruce at one point.
Right.
And he's a fleshed out, you know, he's a real comedian of the age. So it makes it feel like it's dropped into the real world and she's an actual character, which in a way I guess makes me feel like it's limiting on the potential for how big she could get.
Maybe. And one interesting thing is that the first, other than just my friends telling me you have to go watch The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, the first time I kind of saw somebody outside my friends talking about it was that she was on Colbert.
Mm-hmm.
And I would encourage you guys to watch the interview with her on Colbert, because – and maybe it's fake and Colbert was kind of joking with her, but it kind of seems like he didn't realize she wasn't a real person. Because he starts referencing things and she's like, well, you know, the character's entirely fictional. And he's like, oh, oh, and you know, so it's possible that that was planned, but it kind of, it looks really sincere.
Right.
And I could see that.
That
because
people,
it feels surreal.
We had the question earlier about what comedians she could run into. None of us know. We don't know what that scene looks like. So
we don't know the era.
So there could easily, I mean, there's nothing they can do that's going to break the fourth wall for us. We're like, oh, there was no Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is a fantastic show, and I'm excited to watch the rest of it. And you guys are already giving glowing reviews. So
yeah, it's fantastic.
Sure. Yeah. All right, and let's close out by jumping over to Netflix so we can talk about my next guest needs no introduction,
who's your next guest?
Barack Obama, because then they do introduce him.
Yes.
It's a little bit weird. Seems like, why'd you pick that title otherwise? But David Letterman's new project where once a month he's going to interview some of the highest profile guests that I think he can get his hands on. And this was the first one. What'd you guys think?
If you're going to start off, start big. Start with the most recent president of the United States.
That was awesome. To see how comfortable Obama is, just to see Obama, it was great to hear him talk. And he talks so effortlessly about everything.
Yep.
It's weird when you notice that David Letterman is out of his league. Talking to Obama.
Yeah. When you see that, like, when he starts asking him questions, and Letterman does this sort of goofy thing, like, no, I ask you the questions. And then Obama circles around to the joke later, and he's like, I had a bunch of questions, but Dave got grumpy.
Yeah.
And Letterman cracks up. Like, these guys seem like people, like, I want them to hang out together and have beach vacations and just video that.
I want them to run for office.
Yes.
Oh, man. He could run as vice president, I guess.
Yeah, could you be vice president once you're president?
I think so.
So,
sure.
I don't know what...
Just switch him and Biden.
This reminded me of when Obama sat down for Mark Maron. It was such a casual and fun conversation. You got this sort of insight into Obama as the person, not just as the president. And I thought that they did a great job of sort of... They danced around some of the stuff around Trump, which I thought was done well. Like, you can tell that Letterman wanted to ask him more, but that they would sort of move on to other stuff because they didn't want the whole show to become about Obama talking about Trump. They wanted to be the show about Obama and his history and you know, his legacy and who he is as a person, who his kids are and who his wife is. And I thought that was just great.
And Obama has the integrity and the respect for the actual office of presidency that he wouldn't try and talk like terribly about the current president.
Yeah. No.
I mean, he occasionally will voice some dissent about like policy, but he never tries to actually go for personal attacks against Trump.
No, that's me. I do that.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting if our current president doesn't land in jail, how he treats the succeeding president.
Oh, man.
Because I imagine he'll just be a complete brat like he is about everything.
What I'm curious about this, and this was really a great intro because David Letterman also sort of crosses the bridge in Mississippi with
John Lewis.
And you can tell that he is mindful of just kind of what a big deal this is. Like, both he and Obama have a humility about their place. Like, they both know they're pretty hot shit. They know that they're at the top of their game. But they also have a humility about the luck that was required to get there and the fact that they're not perfect. And I think that humility comes through in the way that they react to each other. Like, Obama knows that Letterman is, like, one of the guys to be interviewed by. He knows that this is a big deal. You know, this is a guy coming back from retirement to come and do an interview. So he treats it with the gravity it requires. And I'm curious what the show's going to look like because – this is kind of a phenomenal thing. I don't know what episode 2 looks like.
It's George Clooney.
Yeah.
Well, and then
so
Malalia.
It's just
going
to be a big bobblehead episode.
Yeah. Well, and then Malalia.
Oh, is Malala Yousafzai is going to be on this?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Like, that one should be the second episode, right?
Yeah, George Clooney has a tough act to follow.
Clooney is he's the sorbet. Clooney is the sorbet.
You were talking about the point about being lucky.
Yeah.
And that was actually one of my very favorite parts of this interview because it's kind of long been sort of like a life philosophy of mine and kind of something I always think about in the back of my head, which is that hard work like isn't enough. If hard work was enough, then there wouldn't be single moms working three jobs trying to make it in Detroit.
Yeah.
If hard work was enough.
Right.
It's the only thing you can affect, but it isn't enough.
Right.
And so it was so awesome to hear two people that I respect so much for obviously very different reasons. Mm-hmm. One of them helped shape the world into a better place. And
the other is
just
Barack Obama. Just an easy joke. I'm just going to go for it.
Good. Well done. And so it was so cool to hear them both talk about that and recognize that in themselves. Mm-hmm. It was cool to hear the way that Obama internalized that and him and Michelle try to make policies and environments and opportunities so that other people can be lucky too.
Yeah.
But what I also really loved is how it segued into a story for Letterman.
Yeah.
Where he was like, you know, on that point of being lucky, you know, I think about Congressman John Lewis, who is a big civil rights activist. He's a congressman now. He was the one who crossed the bridge initially and ended up in the hospital because of it in Selma. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Letterman is like, I was around then. You know? But do you know where I was on that very day? I was drunk on a cruise ship with four idiot white friends of mine. Why wasn't I in Alabama?
Yeah.
And it was like the gravity of that and something for white people like us to think about. It was just such an interesting moment.
Yeah, I agree.
That was such a good demonstration of exactly what Obama was talking about. And it was brilliant.
That struck me too, because it's the thing, it's like none of us are perfect and haven't been. And we've all, you know, if you look at our past, we're like, well, there's always been a question. We're like, why wasn't I here? Why wasn't I doing the better thing? But the thing I thought was interesting about Letterman talking about that is that he's gotten better as he goes on. He's learned to use his pulpit for that kind of purpose.
Correct. Yeah.
And it was not just about a, why was I not there? It was a, I learned and I realized and I made myself better. And I think that's the real lesson out of that.
Yeah. And it's lovely because, you know, there's so much about politics and philosophy that I agree with when it comes to Obama, Barack and Michelle Obama.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of them is something that was a common talking point of Michelle's when she was my very favorite first lady, my forever FLOTUS.
Yeah.
And that is, if you walk through a door of opportunity, you don't keep strutting, you turn around and help somebody else through it.
Yeah.
And so it was cool to see that play out in such a very tangible way, but also in such an accessible and funny way. Because the conversation, while it was very – it carried a lot of gravity because obviously we're talking about civil rights. We're talking about very important issues. But at the same time, how was it still funny?
Yeah, it was.
It was such a charming conversation.
Like there was no point at which I was looking at my watch. Like I would have watched I would have watched hours more of these guys talking.
That's what I was like. They could have done 4 hours and I would have just been gripped by it.
Yeah.
In fact, like they have some like edit points in there that seem a little weird. It's like the conversation's going and obviously they stop to just move on to something.
Yeah.
And that's more a commentary on Netflix and the editing job that was done there that I thought was a little jarring.
Mm.
Like, huh, what, how did that resolve that we're just kind of jumping over? Whatever. Okay. But I also was fascinated by how the unfortunate elephant in the room, of course, is the comment on Trump and how they danced around it. And yet just seeing the profound sensitivity, the thoughtfulness, the eloquence of Obama and everything he had to offer and his point of view on everything, his like reflection on his time in office, stuff he learned. It's such a contrast that you can't help but go, who do we have in that office? Damn it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of depressing to watch. At the same time, it was sort of uplifting. It was depressing. Like, Letterman did, and it was funny every time he did it. He was like, well, I know you got to get back to the Oval Office. I'm glad you're still president. And that is how so many of us feel. It's just like, we just want to pretend he's still the president.
Well, I loved, and on that joke, Obama had a hilarious joke.
Yeah.
That was like, well, you know, I would, but, you know, if it wasn't for Michelle
or the
Constitution.
And everybody's applauding, and he's like, no, you don't understand. If it wasn't for the Constitution, Michelle wouldn't let me run.
Yeah, exactly.
So good that he got the applause and he got to correct it for the joke.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I even love his little heartwarming story about like the lamp. He talked about
the lamp story was so good.
Yeah, he just has these little anecdotes that he so effortlessly tells. And man, I miss the guy.
I know.
Yeah,
remember when our president and FLOTUS both graduated from Harvard?
Yeah.
So classy.
Yeah. So on that uplifting / depressing note.
It could be that way again tomorrow.
That's
it
true.
Could.
That's what elections are for.
That's what elections are for.
Vote, people, no matter what I said earlier.
Yeah.
Randy doesn't like voting, apparently.
The important thing to take from this conversation is that Randy loves dick.
Oh, that's true.
The important thing to take from me is that you should vote.
Oh.
I love voting dick.
That's not going to be a good
one. It's almost weirder than just saying I love dick. You made it weirder.
You're welcome.
This is like when you started talking about Bryan Cranston's ass before we even mentioned the show, you know, so that to our listeners, it's apropos of nothing.
You know what's weirder is when I'm talking about his ass next week. That's going to be weirder.
It's not going to be normal.
So, guys, I love you, the listeners. I just want to thank you for enduring this. thank you guys so much. Thank you. Special shout out to the patrons that are helping support our show. We appreciate all of you guys, and we will be back next week to talk about more TV goodness. Thank you, Ashley, and thank you, Randy. And until next week,
I love dick.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter at TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.